Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Break up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
A kiss from Keith Stroud, time-honoured tweeting from Taunton Town. Who does keep all the pennants after their exchange before kickoff? Can you announce your arrival in a division you've been relegated to? What mundane animation should be added to FIFA 22? Who are we fearing for in the Premier League this season? And are we about to witness the death of the header? Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £3.49 a month. That's 30% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichéspod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichéspod. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 84 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me first of all is David Walker. I was thinking about using this as an extended piece of this podcast, but I don't want to dwell on it too much given how disgusting it was. But you may have seen referee Keith Stroud, Dave, blowing a kiss to the match ball ahead of Fulham versus Middlesbrough. I'm just not sure what the point of it was. Was he sort of welcoming football back? Was that the sentiment he was trying to express?
When you first mentioned this, I thought it was Keith Stroud trying to muscle in on the comedy ref scene like we discussed last week with Kevin Friend. Mm. But watching the clip, there doesn't seem to be a lot of... He's got a really stern look on his face as he does it. It doesn't seem to be an obvious sort of funny, like Mike Dean-esque bit of slapstick.
No, I think he's very much in character. I think,
yeah, you know, blowing a kiss to something,
which you then go on to
pick up
interact
immediately.
With.
Bit odd, actually. I think maybe I can applaud the sentiment, but I don't think he's quite nailed the execution there.
Alongside you today, James Moore, irreversible global warming, eh?
Yeah, it's a funny old game, isn't it?
I fear this is a genuine "it is what it is" situation.
Well, I mean, it is what it is, isn't it?
It is what it is.
That's exactly what it is.
I do start to wonder if football suddenly becomes massively futile now.
Yeah, I mean, has this been announced over the weekend?
Have global warming. We've just been through a pandemic, mate. Football can last anything.
It's over, is it? It's done. We can just all run out into the streets naked and throw caution to the wind.
Yeah,
good to know.
Yeah, exactly. I just start to wonder about the place for a frivolous football podcast in the universe right about now. Maybe we shouldn't dwell on it, but I'll tell you what we should dwell on, James. Big question for you at the start of this podcast. There's no other way to phrase this other than sounding like we're on Have I Got News For You, but here goes anyway. What links the following clubs over the last week? Taunton Town FC, Braintree Town FC, AFC North Kilworth Sunday, FC Tucson from Arizona, NFL outfit New Orleans Saints, Kenya's AFC Leopards, and Watford.
Watford, that's the punchline.
They're not all owned by Gino Pozzo.
Genuinely good guess.
Have they all had games called off because of bad weather? Are we linking back to global warming and stuff?
No.
Okay. Yeah,
too sensible for that. No. In fact, they have all wryly tweeted over the last week or so that they are signing Lionel Messi.
Yeah, okay.
I'm really disappointed to see Watford at the bottom of that list.
Watford are slightly too big to do that, aren't they?
Yeah, let's dwell on Watford's one for a second. Let me just open it up and read it out to make Dave feel incredibly embarrassed. Yeah, simply, and for our next signing, ... a picture of Lionel Messi. I'm not actually sure if he's being pictured alongside someone they have actually signed for an extra layer of intrigue. But yeah, James, Watford should be above this, right? I mean, quite literally above this.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a sort of, something that a non-league team would do, you know, to go viral or whatever. And even then, I think that joke has kind of been done now so many times. And we had it all last summer when he was leaving last summer, didn't we? Surely everyone had their kind of bite at it then. Premier League team for the next few months at least. I really don't think they should be... Sorry, David.
You've relegated us before November. That's nice.
I mean, a bit like the Community Shield confusion from last week. It's genuinely hard to keep track. I think we can appreciate that. Unless you actually support one of the teams, of course. But, I mean, Dave, Taunton pretty much opened the floodgates for this, as far as I could see from my research. And they got a really good stab at this. It was... little pen writing emoji first. All done really sort of straightforward.
They've done a Photoshop.
Yeah, his head's a bit too big, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the classic sort of, you know, they've given it a good go. They've put his head on some player from Taunton Town FC. And yeah, it does look slightly like one of those little football figures.
Yeah.
But, you know, fair play. They've gone to some effort there, at least. They haven't just found a stock image of Getty, like Watford.
I don't know what the New Orleans Saints were doing getting involved. Just go away. This is our little part of Rye sporting discourse. Go away.
It wasn't even like fancy coming to play gridiron Messi, like, you know, with him in a, you know, could you be the kicker? It was literally just like, oh, we've signed Messi.
Yeah.
There was absolutely no wit to it whatsoever.
What percentage of their followers are going to get that? Like, I mean, I know, like, Lionel Messi's obviously incredibly famous, but to like an American audience who are potentially not football / soccer followers.
Well, maybe this was an audience grab. Maybe this was the whole point. It's even worse.
If you're going to get anyone, I think they'll probably get it. Mm. Let's give the good people of New Orleans some credit here.
The cherry on this increasingly tiresome cake, James. Here's Livingston manager David Martindale being interviewed after a game this weekend on Sky.
We've got our boy coming in the building tomorrow, hopefully, and then I'm probably going to be looking for one more.
We won't tell anyone any names you can give us.
This boy Messi, he's out of contract.
Ah, right. Okay.
I don't like talking about it, you know, to be honest. Like,
he didn't even have the conviction to finish a sentence, did he?
I actually quite like that. Yeah.
It's slightly Lampardian in his approach, which is, as we know, a very tricky thing to master. But what my favourite thing about was that, James, was him sort of thumbing in the vague direction of Barcelona as he did it. That was the breeziness that the whole thing really needed. But he couldn't commit to the straight face, you know, aspect of it. So he collapsed.
The boy Messi.
Messi. Yeah. Had to be done, didn't it? Had to be done. Because you know you're going to get a titter from a Sky Sports reporter when you unleash that sort of banter.
Again, much like we've discussed on many occasions how the Scottish voice lends itself well to football co-commentary. Mm. I also think that there's an element, if that was a dour Englishman, I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. But the nice Scottish lilt there, it was fine. That was acceptable.
When does a lilt become a burr? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. James, head in hands already, but save some despair because the earth has gone, and so indeed has the game. History made, say Juventus, this weekend, as Alexandro, ahead of their friendly against Barcelona, exchanged cryptocurrency fan tokens with Busquets. So no penance.
Hang on, what?
It's all terrible, isn't it? They were exchanging fan tokens, which is a form of cryptocurrency, I understand.
So is that like some kind of exchange that happens like via sort of some smartphone or something? Is there actually a physical thing involved?
Presumably, yeah. Big plastic things for your mantelpiece, which would appear to represent the currency itself. But in summary, is this genuinely games gone?
I don't understand these things. I mean, I think there'll be an athletic explainer at some point, but I really just don't, I don't get it.
I mean, surely one of the fundamental points of cryptocurrency is that it is not a physical thing.
Yeah.
It exists entirely in some sort of, I don't know, a fucking bank or a server somewhere. But it's rubbish. It is rubbish. And they've got it. They've got a similar thing like on their shirts this season. It's like dollar sign Inter. exchange dollars, JUV fan tokens with Barcelona. What is it?
It does seem a bit strange that these big European football clubs would be kind of highlighting the slightly weird ways they're exchanging funds.
Is this an NFT thing? Is this crypto? We were hopelessly out of our depth discussing this, obviously.
It surely confirms its status as a Games Gone moment if none of us can understand what the hell is going on. Not necessarily an indictment on us, I don't think. But yeah, just lots of hand-wringing about this. Which, I mean, on the face of it, looks fairly empty, but no doubt it's nefarious as well. So lots of people wringing their hands about that. Let's wring our hands about this, Dave. The curtain-raising fixture for the Championship on Friday night, Bournemouth hosting West Brom at the Vitality. Here were the scenes when West Brom equalised.
Sent in by Townsend. To work it in with his feet this time. Whips in that cross. O'Shea arriving! And arriving to great effect! West Bromwich Albion announced their arrival this season in the Championship.
Simple question here, Dave, on behalf of Sky Sports' Gary Weaver. Can you announce yourself in the division you've just been relegated to?
No.
No?
Because it's not an announcement you want to be making. You can announce if Hull were in the first game or Peterborough United, they could have announced their return or their arrival. No, I'm not having it.
Yeah, much as West Brom's yo-yo status is often over-exaggerated, an unfair tag, some say. There is an element that the Championship probably kind of quite familiar with West Brom, thank you very much. No need to announce yourselves.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But I do think it kind of works, but I just think that the tone is wrong. It's not a triumphant announcement, is it? It's a kind of, you're sort of gingerly announcing your return. I get that. It's kind of like, so you're like, when you're a young man and you live with mates and you go out for a drink with a girl, but
yeah. Where's this going?
You come back at like 9:30 and everyone knows that's gone badly and it kind of goes without being said. So West Brom are kind of wearingly saying evening in the same way. That's the announcement they're making.
West Brom have been friend zoned by the Championship.
Basically, yeah. Not by the Premier League, surely.
Yeah, that's actually a really good analogy. Yeah, I quite like that one. I think we can
speaking from experience there, James.
Oh yes.
Oh, lovely stuff. A confessional. James, news from the world of computer games. This is actually the only aspect of FIFA 22 I'm actually quite interested in, which is the non-gameplay action. They've introduced what are known as cinematics and new scenes for the latest game. These include team-specific warm-up sequences, dressing room moments, teams inspecting the pitch, which is, I guess, like wandering around before a FA Cup final, and the groundskeeper making last-minute preparation. In some ways, I'm quite impressed about how mundane they've gone here. This isn't spectacular stuff, but the groundkeeper sort of sticking his fork in the pitch, really adding to the reality of the game.
Ultra-realism, isn't it? I think that's quite nice. Yeah, that's the kind of thing you like. I think you want to be able to simulate the conversations. You know, the small talk that players have at the end of a game with opponents. And I guess if you're not bashing the triangle button to hold your hand over your mouth, you're going to get in trouble with the FA for some misspeak or whatever.
You want to control. You actually want to be in charge of these elements as opposed to just watching them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, international track and field vibe. You're just hammering the triangle button to make sure you don't get, an FA charge.
That would be great. Look, mini games. So you can get to be the groundskeeper. You have to move them around the pitch and pick the right bit to put the fork in. Turn the sprinklers on at the right time.
Would play. Yeah, would play. And then in the end, you get your move to Real Madrid from Bournemouth or something like that and get an athletic long read written about you.
I do like the idea of one of the groundskeepers in the Premier League being getting the call up from EA Sports to come in and do the motion capture with his fork.
You need to get the forking technique right, because if anyone who knows anything about groundskeeping is playing the game, they're not going to be fooled.
Absolutely.
Elsewhere, Dave, in the game, they've introduced a nice little touch, which is if your team is underperforming in an important match, you may even see the crowd leaving early. That's kind of cool. That is good. Fairly easy to produce, I imagine.
This is a real test of the people who make these games at EA Sports and how prepared they are to really put their money where their mouth is here. Okay, so you say you're going to be, realistic with these cinematic scenes and in-game sequences and stuff. Are you, if you're getting the fans walking out, then are the other end of the ground going to sing the, we can see you sneaking out? Yeah. Go the whole hog. And it's all too often they just sort of don't quite get it right, really, in those sort of things. And people like us who actually like football more than we like computer games get annoyed by this stuff. But obviously most people that play FIFA just love playing the game and don't give a toss about the pitch markings or the stadium scenes. But why can't they go even further? if you select a Saturday lunchtime kickoff, it needs to be a sleepy atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, like, could you get like a sort of accident on the ring road and people are getting there late?
Delayed kickoff. You have to wait 15 minutes and you can't
you
skip.
it's not the pitch, it's the areas around the stadium that the snow is affecting. Anyway, we asked our listeners for some suggestions of more mundane situations in football that need to be accounted for in these sorts of games. Dave, first one, this was from me, actually. I think they, I don't know if they've got this already, but they need...
You're allowed to do that?
Yes. I listen, technically. I'd like to see the attacking substitute not really paying attention to the laminated set-piece folder before they come on in the 67th minute. That would be good. Feels like a fairly easy one to animate. Maybe the shine of the laminated folder is hard to recreate. Don't know how many pixels.
No, I think the PS5 should be able to handle a bit of lamination.
James, A-Patch 27, quite like this one. Players putting their tracksuit tops in a bin bag held by the hurried kit man before they start. That would be part of the kind of warm-up routine, I'd hope.
Has that ever happened?
Yeah, a bin bag?
Yeah, they're sort of throwing all their bibs and stuff to the guys that's got to hold it on. Maybe the bin bag was inaccurate, so A-Patch 27, do more research into your pre-match kit man routine. But James, you're not on board with that one.
Yeah, what? You mean like the kind of stadium jackets, the anthem jacket things they'll wear when they come up and line out? And then, I think that works. Yeah. If you actually want to see them take them off, though.
It's a good point, actually. I mean, I've never watched what they do with those jackets.
They never show us, do they? They want us to know, do they, the Premier League?
Actually, and what happens to the Bitcoin or whatever, or the lanyards that they sell? Well, not lanyards.
Wondered. Where do they go? Like the penance.
Thank you. Yeah. Who takes them?
I don't know. Auctioned off.
But I mean, physically, after they've exchanged them at the start of the game, where do they go after that? Are they like down the back of like the captain's shorts or whatever for the whole? I mean, I don't know where do they go?
Don't know.
Just a man. A man will come on and take them.
Yeah, a man. A man that comes on and takes them. Anyway, the suggestions do get better from here, I promise. Dave, Connor Garrett says, FIFA 22 simply requires cinematics of fans heading to the toilets or for refreshments during injury time of the first half, something interesting happening on the pitch while they're en route, and them having to awkwardly find a temporary perch as to not miss it.
Yep, I'm on board with that. I think an extension could be any game played at Wembley Stadium, a zoomed out camera angle with the club Wembley seats filtering back in the first 15 minutes. Of the second half.
As with many things like this, we talked about this with films before. I feel like there's an opening here for a consultancy role. It's like I can think of a thousand tiny things that you can add to this game. Yeah, really add.
But,
to
but
the whole
crucially,
experience.
Crucially, it's basically an exercise in making the game bigger, more boring, less appealing to the people that actually play it.
Good.
And more appealing to the very small handful of people like us who want to play like this.
Next up, James, Josh Dola says FIFA 22 cinematics need to include the disgusting things players do, like spit or clear snot from their nose.
That is true. That is good.
It's an unwelcome reality, but it is indeed a reality.
Yeah,
snot.
The glisten on a PS5, you can imagine that looking pretty good. Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, maybe this is more of a Football Manager thing than FIFA, because obviously you're in control of the players in FIFA all the time. But like, could you insert some... like one in a half a million event, like where you get like an El Hadj Diouf moment and he spits on the player and he gets sent off. Like just really random things that only come up once for a handful of people who will ever get them. But that happened. That's football. Sometimes mad stuff happens. A balloon, like a Sunderland beach ball moment.
Yeah, I mean, I do worry that there's an overarching things you don't like to see in football mentality there. They don't want to lose their licences and things like that.
No.
They don't want to sully their relationship with the governing bodies. But yeah, spitting on a pitch, it's a reality. Let's have it. Maybe not at players, though. It's the worst thing you can do to a fellow professional, digital or otherwise. James, next up, Adi Dassler, WSAG, says close-ups of supporters before kickoff who notice too late that they're on the big screen and start waving just as the camera moves off them. If this happens, FIFA will have reached peak reel. Again, perfectly easy to engineer, surely.
Yeah, the slightly better version of that is like the dejected fan at the end of a game when their team is like losing 2-0 in injury time, like head in hands. Then suddenly they see they're on the screen and immediately like they're delighted. Doesn't matter that the team has lost this cup final. They're on a big screen in a stadium. So now they're like waving like an absolute idiot.
Such a fleeting moment. There's nothing you're ever going to remember for that as well.
Yeah, I don't really see seeing yourself on a big screen in this day and age. People see themselves on screens all the time now.
But
I mean,
it's
myself
instinct,
on the screen right now.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's instinct. You don't know how you're going to react until it happens.
Because some of these they're absolutely spot on. Obviously, they're all things that happen in football and would add another layer of depth to FIFA. But like the previous example there, the crowd, it's like... it would have to be a cutaway. They'd have to, you'd have to take away from the match action. And I don't know if you're like me, but if you play it, I often just skip those things straight away anyway. I imagine 90% of people do. But one thing that could be good that would be part, you'd see it as the game was going on, like we said, like the fans leaving. Could we have the stewards, like if it's a high profile derby game or end of season in career mode and you're expecting like a pitch invasion, the stewards marching out on the 80th minute just to surround the pitch.
Definitely.
And getting their position.
That feels like something they could have incorporated into sort of games in the early 90s, you know, like the top down ones where you can see the stewards kind of filling out around the sides. That could have easily done. Sensible Soccer would have done that. They would have been clever enough, wry enough to include those. I'm going to end on these two even more mundane notes. First of all, Ben St. Jenks, James, says FIFA 22 needs to include the bored-looking members of St. John's Ambulance sat just off the edge of the dugout, plastic cups of tea in hand. Now, again, lovely touch, nice and mundane, needs to be included. Whenever I see them on the screen during a broadcast, all I think about is, do they support one of the teams? And because most of the time you see them, it's in a replay of a goal going in and the bench celebrating, and you see them right in the corner. You think, are they going to react? Are they allowed to react? Is it unprofessional to celebrate a goal if you're from the St. John's Ambulance crew?
I'm assuming it's the same sort of principle as being a steward or whatever, right? I mean, presumably stewards are just as likely to support the team, the local team, given they presumably live locally. And they don't celebrate, do they? I don't think I've ever seen a steward celebrate a goal, but surely a lot of them must celebrate the club where they're working.
The stewards are technically not allowed to watch the match, are they? They're always watching the crowd sort of happening behind them.
Yeah. You see the odd one, though.
But the best way to see that, a good way for it to be highlighted, because I think obviously normal situation, especially in this country, is that, you know, there's not a lot of space between the goals and the stands, so they kind of get lost in the limbs, as it were. But when you see a game like if it's a Champions League or it's abroad, and there's the huge running track behind the goal, and there's sort of loads of different people just in that area. Stewards, photographers,
undefined personnel.
A lot of them, often you see them celebrating.
Like if you look at like the Gaza goal from Euro 96, and I know, you know, this has been a thing that's been talked about a lot over the last few months, and forgive me if you're Scottish.
Fine.
But if you watch that, there's like 50, 60 people behind the goal.
Who are they?
No idea who they are.
Maybe sort of halftime entertainment people. They were going to unfurl something at halftime. In which case, that role presumably doesn't require a great deal of impartiality, so you're probably allowed to celebrate.
Military band members, probably.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. I want to end on this last one, possibly the most evocative of all in a low-key kind of way, Dave. Nifty Palms says, footage of two people standing next to each other at halftime, not talking. One with a coffee stroke tea, the other with a sausage roll doing a semi-half-assed dance to the music on at halftime, preferably Republica Ready to Go. Sensational detail there. It's very kind of... studio still talking about what Team X needs to do in the second half.
Yeah.
And it's just panning around. Yes.
It's great. It's great. You know, just keeping the blood flowing in a cold winter's afternoon.
Yeah. Or someone just doing a little bit of a jig, but not quite.
Just the knees. Just sort of, you know, when you kind of, you know, you stood up and you don't want to sit down, but you also don't want to stand up for 15 minutes in the second half if you're not going to go to the concourse. You just sort of lean against the seat, sort of perch on the folded up seat. So the knees are just moving.
I have to say, on the pitifully rare occasions that I go to games, James, at half time, if I do find myself, because I can never be bothered to go and get a beer and tea, I'm very much a stay in my seat kind of guy, taking the scene. But when I do stand up from my seat in that scenario and I just sort of look around, maybe I do indeed do the semi-half-assed jig to the music, I can only think that I'm on camera at that moment. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The camera operator's got me. So I thought, what would I do? Don't know. So always behave as if you are being watched at halftime on Sky Sports, I think.
In life in general or just at halftime?
Yeah, absolutely. Just go through life as if you are being picked up on camera at halftime on Sky Sports.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Right, next up. And a hugely important question ahead of the new season, which starts this Friday night in the Premier League, Dave. Who do you think we're going to be fearing for in the early stages of 2021-22? And indeed, conversely, who are we going to breezily claim will simply be okay despite their poor start? Who immediately jumps to mind for your fearing for label?
Well, obviously, I've got some skin in the game here. and I'm very much in the fearing for Watford camp at the moment. As I see that quite a few pundits are, I think, as well. I haven't seen much of. Oh, they'll be okay.
Right.
I think we're definitely on that. We're on the fearing for side of the line. I'm seeing a lot of, in my opinion, misplaced they'll be okays about Brentford.
Right.
I think a lot of people are overrating them because of they're the club that they do things in a different way, and they've got an owner who's a professional gambler and all, and they've signed players from Denmark that you've never heard of before. But you know what? They actually finished behind Watford in the Championship,
and they should have gone up, and they fluffed it.
They only got up over, just dragged themselves up over the line.
I don't share your cynicism. Brentford are going to be this season's breath of fresh air.
Yeah, they are.
Brentford have got real
Sheffield United vibes, haven't they? They'll have a great first season and they'll be absolutely crap the following season and get relegated.
Such a fresh breath of air.
Let me clutch at straws, okay?
Yeah, can I tell you who I worry for, who I fear for?
Who do you fear for?
That's Norwich. Ooh. They've lost the boy, Buendia. I think there are other players being looked who moved away as well. And their first four games are hot.
Todd Cantwell, James?
I couldn't think of his name. The one who looks like a student.
Yes.
Yeah, if he goes too, you do think, but obviously they got relegated quite feebly last time around, even though they didn't really ever look that bad in any one game. Yeah. It's kind of thing. They're the ones that you fear for.
Getting big, haven't learned from their mistakes vibes from Norwich.
It's just kind of feels exactly
and it's fine for us to say all these things because this isn't our genuine opinion. We're projecting this onto other people who may be saying this, so it's fine. So there's no backlash from anybody.
It's sort of a bit of both.
I mean, they don't really qualify for a they'll be fine either, I don't think.
No.
You've got to have sort of latent Premier League pedigree about you to be a they'll be fine, I think.
They've got real yo-yo club vibes about them now. They didn't feel like they were that bothered about getting relegated, and that can never be good.
Yeah, being not bothered at all about being relegated is a huge, huge red flag for this.
Quite possibly the lowest key Championship title win ever as well. So there's no real fanfare announcing their return to the Premier League.
Yeah. Well, let's ask our listeners. First up is, here's Africa Stamps, professional philatelist since 1998. He says, I think there will be an even split of Evertonians in both the fear for camp and the probably fine camp. Everton very much an edge case. Everton could be the standout candidate here, Dave, because they have kind of this kind of inbuilt sense of calamity about them, but also undeniably Premier League quality at all times. So they could have a foot in both camps at the very start of the season.
I see that. I think the Rafa factor is important in this one here, because he is somebody who proper football men will rally behind and say, well, look, yeah, they've had a storm, but come on, Rafa will get them organised. He'll get them on the training ground and they will be okay. They will be okay. They are classic too big to go down fodder if they find themselves in 17th after four games played or something. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. James Brian Horror simply says, fear for Wolves this season. Do you fear for Wolves? I've got a slight fear for Wolves.
I have a fear of Wolves. You know what? I don't know much about their manager or any of the players they've signed. I assume they're all kind of Portuguese Mendes clients, but I don't know.
But again, that can feed into fear for, you know.
That is true.
Ignorance does breed fear, after all.
That is true.
The only thing I think about Wolves, thing I'm thinking about that will happen with Wolves is there's going to be an awful lot of different pronunciations of the manager's surname.
I haven't heard his name said out loud yet.
Somebody will go the full hog and do some sort of ludicrous over the top Portuguese pronunciation.
Lush.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there'll be a lot of that. Nice. Nuno is simple. Nuno, we all got so easy to do Nuno, but now we've got this the Portuguese element.
I don't think it's a good sign if people aren't sure how to pronounce your manager's name. I don't think that's a good sign.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
we're back to ignorance again.
Yeah, we are a bit. It's fine. Sort of apologies for this, but not really. Anyway, moving on. Sam says, I fear for Palace, James. I really do. Not sure about that one. I think Palace are moving out of fear for territory, but you don't know how their season's going to pan out.
I guess it's all relative, isn't it? If you think, you know, Palace have made a couple of good, like, exciting signings, if your expectation is therefore that they're going to finish sixth, then maybe your fear is that, oh, actually, they'll finish 12th.
I don't know. I don't think fear four is an underperformance thing. I think fear four is just being genuinely woeful from the very start, on paper and on grass.
You're fearful that they're going to get relegated, is that it?
Yeah.
There's no context.
Yeah, I fear for them. I mean, they could be a big club, but in an absolutely horrendous state. I don't think Palace tick any of those boxes, so they might escape that at least early doors. He also goes on to say, Burnley under Dyche are the most they'll be fine side in Premier League history. Is it based, that presumably is based on the fact that Dyche knows what he's doing down there and they always seem to scrape a result and all that bollocks?
Yeah, it's just classic Turf Moors. Will it forever be a tough place to go?
Yeah.
But what they will be the most, they will be the absolute most you fear for them club if Dyche leaves.
Yeah. Oh, unbelievably. Yeah,
absolutely. 100%.
Unbelievably. Yeah. I'm getting my provisional fears in for when he leaves. Definitely. I'm planting that flag in the ground straight away. Finally, James, Luke Fruin says, I really like this one actually. Expect Southampton to once again receive the treble of they'll be fine, they'll surprise a few, and you do fear for them all in the same season. They'll surprise a few. We didn't cover that. That's nice.
Isn't it? Is they'll surprise a few? Surely that comes first.
Oh, yeah. And it's more of maybe a newly promoted thing, maybe. No, maybe not.
No, I don't think necessarily. But yeah, having... And again, you know, we mentioned Norwich losing Buendia and the other one. Obviously, Southampton have lost things. You know, terrible run of form the second half of last season. Hassan Hurtel has got, you know, sacked in November, written all over him.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
The old classic calendar year situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they've actually only won two games in the calendar year.
Yeah.
Fraudulent metric. But maybe we do fear for Southampton. We'll find out. But this isn't a season preview and never will be. So let's move on.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Alarming piece in The Athletic on Monday morning, Dave, from Michael Cox, who has decided to confront the potential future of football without heading. Based on the recent recommendation that elite-level footballers will have to limit themselves to 10 high-force headers during any week of training, which is slightly discomforting thought anyway. But he's tackled this potential future, and he's backing it up with data. He's found that 74% of headers actually take place outside the penalty areas. So he's suggested a situation where if you were going to try and apply this to a game situation, you could ban heading outside the penalty areas, because that's where the most of it takes place. And he argues a large proportion of headers made outside the penalty areas are relatively meaningless.
Well, I, for one, would be all for banning heading in football.
Okay.
Purely from a selfish point of view, it means I would never have to head a ball again playing Sunday League.
Guaranteed headache on a Sunday.
As exactly as we talked about on the Sunday League episode, I'm just rubbish at it, and it gives me real anxiety every time before I play the game, and I'm never ever going to be any good at it. But anyway, professionally speaking, obviously it would be fraught with difficulties, and I think it would be the absolute nuclear
huge
games gone moment, yeah, wouldn't it? Can you imagine if it was announced one day, you know, in the summer, like IFAB or whoever would decide these things, come out and say, that's it, heading's done.
Yeah.
We cross live now to Charlie Nicholas for his reaction. He'd combust, but not, perhaps not without reason. Obviously, it is such a fundamental part of the game. Like, the cocky thing about the percentages of headers outside the box. Okay, so let's run with that a second. You'd have a ludicrous situation where, like, VAR would have to judge whether a header was inside or outside the box.
Do we need that hassle? I mean, it's about as dramatic as any other VAR decision. So the idea, I mean, probably fairly clear cut to decide. Probably wouldn't happen that often. A header right on the edge of the box probably be okay.
Yeah, you're going to give a penalty as well if it's...
Mm. Oh yeah, what's the punishment? Drop ball? It'd be a drop ball, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would be a drop ball. I think that's fair to say.
But would it? Would it be a free kick to the other team?
Mm. Yeah.
If it's a defensive header.
How heinous are we deciding that headers are going to become? How forbidden? How taboo? It's not an offence, yeah, is it?
I'm really struggling to picture loads of headers outside the box. I can see like a cushioned header back to the goalkeeper.
Just little nods though. Very handy little nods down to a sort of a fellow central midfielder that I think is going to be ashamed to lose. But
and all the goal kicks. I mean, almost every long goal kick will end up with a header, either a flick-on or a
several
defensive header.
What's going to happen to the bouts of head tennis, Dave?
Exactly. All those great videos we get of, oh, look at the championship.
Yes. Like
when a sequence of 15 headers.
This is important because, as you say, you've just mentioned VAR. And as with VAR over the last few years, the focus has always been on the headline stuff, sort of disallowed goals, bad tackles and things like that. It's important, if we are going to have a serious conversation about this sort of stuff, that we think about the edge cases, the one in a million situations that you have to legislate for in the laws of the game, even if they're very unlikely to happen. So we asked our listeners about their more mundane heading situations that we're going to lose from football if indeed heading becomes banned in the future. I'll kick you off with this one, Dave. Murray's Mind. Will new anti-heading regulations cause a surge in dummy headers, where defenders pretend to head an overhit pass and then duck under it at the last second? So how are footballers going to adjust to this? Is gamesmanship going to come into it? Pretending to head a ball. Can you see it?
If you're a dummy header, so if you look like you're going to head the ball, do we get into the realms of sort of being active, like interfering with play, you know, like when you stand in front of a goalkeeper from a free kick and that sort of stuff, even though the ball's nowhere near you? Would the act of pretending to do a header still be an offence, maybe?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, otherwise, yeah. I just thought pretending to do something that was already banned probably isn't a particularly effective way of approaching it, so I'm not sure. But maybe just through sheer muscle memory, everyone will be fooled.
You know, to take it sort of back to something we can all understand, that we've all experienced, would you go as far as saying, right, okay, to make it clear there's no overhead height, like in five-a-side? Then we should then eliminate the prospect of having a dummy header.
We have netting over the stadiums.
Yeah.
You're going to need to have the half-side goals as well.
Slippery slope, it'll be futsal before you know it. James, Ben Fineman says, I think we can all agree that the most missed header will be the overconfident cushioned header back to the goalkeeper at the back post, met with a ripple of applause. I think pound for pound, the coolest thing a footballer can do in a composure sense is the delicate header back or chest back to goalkeeper. Kyle Walker does this a lot to various heart attacks.
Yeah, there's something, you definitely need that kind of air of confidence to do that without it kind of making everyone absolutely shit themselves, don't you?
Yeah, agreed. Some people really are picking holes in this potential future, James. Nick Wilson says, what would happen to headed clearances off the line under these proposed regulations? Will this mean we will see lots of hapless defenders watching the ball sail over their heads because they can't head it away? I mean, that's an insurmountable problem, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be able to stop people doing it. That's just going to be instinctive, right? It's going to be like that Luis Suarez...
What if a ball hits them in the face? Is this going to be intent?
He's not intentionally headed it into the goal.
If your head is in a natural position, surely it's fine.
Yeah.
If you're charging down a free kick and someone smashes it and it goes in off your head, would that be disallowed?
Drop ball. Yeah. There's no advantage played because I don't think it's a... it's not an offence. It's because it's a drop ball-y type of thing. I don't know. It's like the ball going out of play, really. It's not an offence. It's just a technicality. God, this is exciting.
I wonder whether, so often when these sort of things happen, at some point, like a wily coach or a really clever coach will like think of a way around this or think of how to adapt and evolve the game. Would you see like more people using their shoulders? You know, like some people can actually like occasionally pass the ball with the shoulder, with a flick of the shoulder.
Yeah, it could be an increase in chesting as well. Yeah. Be a lot more chesting going on, which is, I think the cardiac lot will get involved then.
Yeah, that can't be great either, can it, really? If people are doing that 20 times a game, that's not going to be brilliant either.
Yeah, fast forward 20 years and it turns out, you know, heart inflammation caused by constant chesting, and then we'd have to start banning that as well. What will you be allowed to propel the ball with?
That's what I'm saying. It's going to be overhead height.
Yeah, chest height.
If you think, Coxie mentioned this in his piece, because heading is such a part of football, it's just forever been that way, and we've never questioned it until now, obviously. It's mad, isn't it? There's no other sport in the world where you actually use your head. It's like a
this was a very good observation. There is no other sport where you use your head.
Yeah.
Can't think of one. Are you allowed to head it in basketball? Is it, what would happen if you headed the ball?
Can you imagine?
You would definitely get a concussion. I mean, that was insane.
Have you ever kicked a basketball? It's so heavy. Yeah. It hurts your foot if you kick a basketball.
And you get the little imprints. Heading it. Like the mitre mould master. You get the little pimples on your head.
Like, can you head it in rugby? Like, if you...
Don't know. It'd be a knock-on, wouldn't it? Be a knock-on.
You head it backwards.
Yeah.
Head it back to the number 10 to a ripple of applause. That'd be great. Finally then, Sam writes in, Dave, and says, I'll miss phantom headers. Managers with their hands in their pockets, nodding from the touchline. And he says, we'll also miss... I mean, this is a grey area. Are they still allowed to do it? Presumably not, because it wouldn't happen in the game. But he says... best of all, defenders heading a few imaginary balls away in the couple of minutes between lineups and kickoff, or when they come out of the tunnel. We'd miss that. These people aren't thinking about these ramifications, the ripples. As soon as you start banning headers, how many different types of header can you name? Dave, you can go first.
Diving.
Yes,
header.
Very good. James.
A looping header.
Near post header.
So that's a glance, I'd say. Is that a subset of glance?
Glancing. Okay, glance. Yeah, glance.
Okay. Glancing. Thank you for the help.
Bullet. Have we had bullet?
No, we haven't.
Towering.
Good one.
Towering header.
Towering's good.
All pressure's on you, James. Just should say that whoever loses this never gets to come on the podcast again. I don't know if this is a win, a prize, or a punishment.
Thumping header.
Good.
Stooping header.
Very good.
Can I just have a defensive header? Is that a thing?
But if a defender heads it, you know, 50 yards up the pitch, that's known as almost onomatopoeic.
Thumping header. Is that a thumping header? That's not onomatopoeic.
Begins with a B.
Booming.
Booming. Yeah,
booming header.
Booming. You could have also had crashing.
No.
Deft. Deft headers.
I'm not sure about some of these.
What would the goal line header be called? The goal line clearance.
Just heroic.
Heroic.
Yeah, heroic. Yeah. Anyway, a hugely worrying future for football without heading, but worth discussing. And in summary, the people who are thinking about banning heading have not really got their heads around the more mundane elements of heading. This isn't all about booming headers and crashing headers. This is about little nods and eyebrows and cushions. With that in mind, thanks, Dave. Your head's probably spinning right now.
Thank you.
And James' head's gone.
Yeah, it really has.
Yeah, it really has. We'll be back with you on Thursday with what I hope is a Mesut Haaland-Dix, our first of the season. I hope you enjoyed our first Tuesday installment of Football Clichés. Cheers, everyone. See you next week.
No. You just literally just said we'll see you on Thursday.
Incredible work. Incredible stuff. This is like banning heading. It's exactly the same. Cheers, everyone. We'll see you on Thursday. Have a lovely week. Doesn't work either because it's part of the week, isn't it? Yeah, it's part of the week. Cheers, everyone. We'll see you on Thursday. Have a lovely 48 hours until then. Cheers.
Just say goodbye.
Cheers, everyone. We'll see you on Thursday. Have a lovely week. Cheers, everyone. We'll see you on Thursday. See you later.
The Athletic.